You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Tonight, the president in the hot seat.
You've coined the phrase, make America great again. Right. Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to African-American community?
Face to face with uncommitted voters for an ABC News town hall in the battleground state of Pennsylvania.
Why don't you support a mandate for national mask wearing? And why don't you wear a mask more often?
Pressing him on issues from the COVID pandemic to racial justice.
Well, I hope there's not a race problem. I can tell you there's none with me.
Did Donald Trump win over any voters tonight?
Nightline, the president and the people, starts right now.
Good evening. Thanks for joining us. Tonight, with Election Day less than 50 days away, President Trump found himself in front of a different audience, uncommitted voters in the swing state of Pennsylvania. And for the very latest, we go to ABC's chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Karl, who was in the room with the president in Philadelphia. John?
Juju, on balance, this was, a pretty good event for Donald Trump. He got to show another side of himself, an empathetic side, talking about the incredible death toll from COVID-19. This was something we rarely see from the president. That said, he also said again that he has absolutely no regrets for anything about the way he handled the crisis. He wouldn't do anything differently. And he said some things that are sure to generate controversy. During one exchange with a pastor from here in Philadelphia, an African-American pastor, the president said, well, I hope there's not a race problem in America. And he had a back and forth that was very interesting on the subject of race. He also said that he believes the virus would go away even if there wasn't a vaccine. That's something that I am sure many health professionals will disagree with. But Juju, on balance, an interesting town hall, a rare chance to see the president truly interact with uncommitted voters.
Thanks, John. Tonight's 90-minute town hall, moderated by our own George Stephanopoulos, covered a wide range of topics, sometimes raising more questions than answers.
Why don't you support a mandate for national mask wearing?
At times, some have called your behavior not presidential. What, if anything, would you do differently if reelected?
I'd like to ask regarding your recent comments about our United States soldiers and referring to them as suckers. How do you expect to win back the support of our military, their families, their friends, and military supporters?
It's easy, because I never made those statements. They were never made by me.
President Trump tonight taking questions directly from uncommitted voters, all socially distanced, at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia.
For the president and the people, a 2020 special.
With the pandemic putting the president's reelection in jeopardy, Trump has come under fire for downplaying the virus. Tonight, the president refuting those claims.
Well, I didn't downplay it. I actually, in many ways, I upplayed it in terms of action. My action was very strong.
All through January and February, you were downplaying, by your own admission, the severity of the crisis, that you didn't want to panic people.
Not downplaying.
But let me just finish the question first.
Not downplaying.
Well, you said those are your
words. I don't want to drive our nation into a panic.
But in the early days of COVID-19, President Trump telling the public that the virus would simply go away, contrary to what most public health experts believe.
You know, a lot of people think that goes away in April. With the heat.
The president doubling down on that message tonight.
It is going to disappear. It's going to disappear.
But I still say we don't take action, correct?
No, I still say it. It's going to disappear, George. We're going to be okay. And it is going away. And it's probably going to go away now a lot faster because of the vaccine. It would go away without the vaccine, George. But it's going to go away a lot faster with the vaccine.
It would go away without the vaccine?
Sure. Over a period of time. Sure. With time, it goes away.
And many deaths.
A new ABC News Ipsos poll showing an overwhelming 65% of Americans disapprove of the president's handling of the pandemic, with only 35% approving.
We still are dealing with 195,000 deaths in the United States right now. When you see that, when you think about that, does that give you any pause? Does it make you think, is there anything I could have done differently? Anything
I think we could have had 2 million deaths if we didn't close out the country.
So you regret nothing?
No, I think we did a great job.
Another point of contention tonight, race relations. After months of unrest across the country with protesters calling for systemic change, racial justice, and police reform, Philadelphia pastor Carl Day confronting the president.
You've coined the phrase, make America great again.
Right.
When has America been great for African Americans in the ghetto of America? Are you aware of how tone deaf that comes off to African American community?
Well, I can say this. We have tremendous African-American support. You've probably seen it in the polls. We're doing extremely well with African-American, Hispanic-American at levels that you've rarely seen a Republican have.
Despite the president's claim, recent polling shows his support among likely black voters is between 5 and 11%.
But you have yet to address and acknowledge that there's been a race problem in America.
So if you go, well, I hope there's not a race problem, I can tell you there's none with me, because I have great respect for all races, for everybody.
Black Americans more than three times more likely than white Americans to be killed by police. And that indicates that this just isn't bad apples. This just isn't choking. This is a real systemic, endemic problem. Do you believe that? What will you do to address it?
They want more police. They want protection. They suffer more than anybody else by bad police protection. All minorities, whether it's Hispanic or black or Asian, they suffer more than anybody else, George. We have to give the police back the authority to stop crime.
But how do you stop police killing blacks at three times the rate of killing whites?
I can only say this, that the police in this country have done generally a great job. There are crimes, there are problems, and there are chokers. They choke under pressure. I mean, they have one quarter of a second to make a decision. And sometimes they make a wrong decision, and that's a terrible thing.
The president sidestepping racial justice, shifting instead to his law and order message.
In the light of the ongoing protests surrounding the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and the recent shooting of Jacob Blake, do you feel racial injustices are occurring in this nation? And if so, what can be done to address them?
Well, I think they were tragic events, and I do feel that we have to also take into consideration that if you look at our police, they do a phenomenal job.
My body, my choice!
Another issue on the forefront of voters' minds, health care, and specifically coverage of pre-existing conditions.
With co-pays, I'm still paying almost $7,000 a year in addition to the co-pay, and should pre-existing conditions, which Obamacare brought into brought to fruition, be removed?
No.
Without, please stop and let me finish my question, sir. I want to know what it is that you're going to do to assure that people like me who work hard, we do everything we're supposed to do, can stay insured. It's not my fault that I was born with this disease.
So, first of all, I hope you are taken seriously. I hope you are. And we are not going to hurt anything having to do with pre-existing conditions. We're not going to hurt pre-existing conditions. And in fact, just the opposite. If you look at what they want to do, where they have socialized medicine, they will get rid of pre-existing conditions. If they go into Medicare for All, which is socialized medicine, and you can forget about your doctors and your plans, just like you could forget under President Obama.
Joe Biden has ran against Medicare for All in the primaries, but much more importantly, Obamacare guaranteed people with pre-existing conditions could buy insurance, guaranteed they could buy it at the same price as everyone else, guaranteed a package of essential benefits, guaranteed that insurance companies couldn't put a lifetime limit on those benefits. You fought to repeal Obamacare. You are arguing.
Well, I essentially did.
You're arguing in the Supreme Court right now to strike it down. That would do away with pre-existing conditions.
So that we can do new health care.
But you've been promising a new health care plan. I interviewed you in June of last year. You said the health care plan would come in 2 weeks. You told Chris Wallace that this summer it would come in 3 weeks. You promised an executive order on pre-existing.
I have it already.
But you've been trying to strike down pre-existing conditions.
I have it already, and it's a much better plan for you. And it's a much better plan.
With 49 days until Election Day, the president trying to close the chapter on the pandemic.
Could you have done more to stop it?
I don't think so. I think what I did by closing up the country, I think I saved two, maybe two and a half, maybe more than that lives. I really don't think so. I think we did a very good job. I don't know if that's been recognized. We've made a lot of governors feel good. We've made some reputationally, we've enhanced their reputation. They didn't have anything. We got them the supplies, we got them the ventilators. We've made a lot of people look good that shouldn't look good, to be honest with you.
We're out of time, Mr. President. Thank you for your
time.
Thank
you very much.
And coming up, breaking down the highlights of the president's performance. Did he help sway any uncommitted voters?
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And joining me now to unpack the biggest moments of tonight's town hall with the president and the people, Yvette Simpson, CEO of Democracy for America, Sarah Fagan, Republican strategist, Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of Chicago, and of course, Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey. Governor Christie, let me start with you. President Trump said he has no regrets about his handling of the pandemic, but our polling found 65% of voters disapprove. How can this be a winning message? And overall, did he win over any undecided voters tonight?
Well, first off, it's his message, and that's what he believes. He's been saying that right from the beginning, and he's continuing to put proof points out there to show the things that did go well. I think what the president did tonight was to calmly and directly answer questions from members of the audience and to spar pretty good with our colleague George Stephanopoulos back and forth. So I think the president walked away from tonight feeling really relatively good about how things went, and I think he should.
From a performance aspect, what were the strongest moments and the weakest for that matter tonight?
The strongest moment was just his general demeanor. You know, I think the president remained calm throughout, and even when members of the audience asked some very confrontational questions and challenging questions to the president, I thought he responded in a way that was respectful and deferential to the citizens that he represents. I think the overall tone was the strongest part of tonight for the president. And listen, some of the questions on COVID are very contentious and difficult for the president.
Sure.
So that was probably the toughest part of the evening, but I think, you know, his general demeanor was the strongest part of the evening.
And Rahm, what's the counter argument to tonight's biggest moments?
I continue to believe the biggest challenge for Donald Trump and the biggest opportunity for Joe Biden is when he's talking about the economy, which is the only place that he's in positive territory from a polling perspective, it is always in the rearview mirror. And, you know, not to quote, but to quote Bill Clinton, never stop thinking about tomorrow. Elections are prospective, not retrospective. And I think given that he's left the real estate of the future open, that's a big opportunity for the vice president to fill and to say, it's not about what happened yesterday, but it's about what we're going to do tomorrow for your kids. The other piece of this, I would say, is that he showed incredible message discipline in the face of adversity. He didn't get knocked off his game. Now, do I think he was factually correct? No. Do I think if I looked at that, I would make sure in real time that the campaign from Biden is putting out constant fact correctors.
Sarah, let's get to the issue of whether people were swayed. Americans got to see a different side of the president tonight. We know that he's lost ground with college-educated suburban women. Was he able to win any of them back?
To Governor Christie's point, this is one of the calmest performances I've seen, and he did get asked some very tough questions, some fair questions, but they were confrontational. And he never lost his cool one time, and it makes you wonder, when he's at a podium with reporters, if that isn't intentional and for show. And I don't understand why he would take that strategy, but he was incredibly calm. And George asked him very tough questions and interrupted him appropriately so, but interrupted him several times on points that George said were factually incorrect. And he never once was ruffled. And so I think from the perspective of suburban women, what they are looking for is a strong and calm leader, and he presented that tonight. Now, where I think he could have done better were on the answers around health care. George asked him repeatedly where the health care plan was that he has been talking about. This, because of COVID, but even prior to COVID, we know that health care was the dominant issue in 2018, and it's likely to be on the forefront of minds when people go to the ballot box, particularly undecided voters and especially women. So I think he could have talked more specifically about what he plans to do for health care, but there's 7 weeks left. He still has time to do it, but tonight perhaps was a missed opportunity.
Yvette, a few of the uncommitted voters pressed President Trump repeatedly on racial justice, and he kept turning it back to law and order and the dignity of the police and their ability to do their job. What's your reaction on that issue?
You know, I think he continues to show how tone deaf he is on issues of race. I think there were some real opportunities for him to actually acknowledge the victims. I think he did that for 2 seconds and spent the rest of his time talking about police. At one point, which was really awkward, he called police officers chokers, which I thought was really uncomfortable and weird. And the fact that he didn't acknowledge systemic racism, even when George confronted him with the facts that show that there is systemic racism and inequity in our policing. And so those are opportunities where I feel like I don't know what he wins by creating this false narrative between supporting the police and supporting black people who are shot by police. And I think he could have done a much better job. What we know in this country is that police killings are the sixth leading cause of death for black men. And the fact that your president can't acknowledge that we have a systemic problem that's resulting in those deaths is a challenge. I think one other thing, Juju, was the fact that he so passionately talked about the loss of pensions for police officers and even the issue around the individual officers who were shot just a couple days ago, but refused to show that empathy for black men and women who have actually been killed by the people who are supposed to protect and serve them. So clearly, I don't think that he's got a good handle on this. He thinks that he even said at one point, actually, that he has a lot of support from African Americans when his support with African Americans is only 8%. I don't know about you, but I don't think that's great or a lot of support. So he missed some opportunities to really show empathy, show a connection, to show that there is a real race problem in America, which he did not acknowledge, and to also separate these two issues between you can support black life and you can also support police officers, and he didn't do that tonight.
Ron, let me bring you back into this discussion. The president, on the issue of law and order, kept hammering down on Democrat mayors of crime-ridden cities. As the former mayor of Chicago, how does this play for voters, do you think, and how do you respond?
You know, first of all, I think that I would look at this and look at what cities are doing, and I think George came at the president correctly. You are the president for those cities as well, as if they're another America separate, and I think he called them appropriately on that. Second is that what you have right now in the country politically is a situation that cities and suburbs have a joint political alliance on a series of issues from public safety to education equity and funding to the environmental protections to transportation issues. And that's why the president's trying to scare the suburbs away from what has become a pretty tight coalition between urban and suburban, what I've always referred to as this metropolitan majority. His attempt to demonize the cities and scare the suburban voters, just say, as we like to say here in Chicago, that dog just won't hunt.
And tomorrow night, we'll be back with our month-long Turning Point series exploring the racial reckoning sweeping across America. Also, be sure to join our conversation with the hashtag TurningPointABC. And that's Nightline for tonight. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.